this episode, first college football rankings. Dabo gets fired up. The SEC has lost its interesting mojo. Iowa has it. Bedlam. And there's a people's court involving Chick-fil-A.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Again, ACC acting up. SEC not. All about football. Boring. Boring, boring, boring. You guys have lost your mojo. Lost your mojo.
Russ Dellinger.
Those coaches you mentioned, I think a lot of them to an extent did adapt to the times and change and evolve. And we've seen that from Nick Saban too, obviously, especially offensively with schematics and how he views the game. Can Dabo adapt now?
And SI's Pat Forty.
Your sales manager is not good, but you're really close to meeting your end of year goals. But you're going to keep the same terrible guy in there for the next month when you could get somebody else in and maybe have a chance of meeting those goals.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. You know, this season's really heating up. We've got Maction on a Tuesday night. It's snowing on the 738 fans gathered in some outpost. Some
Mount
Rust
Pleasant,
Belt outpost.
Toledo. Yep.
Is Connor Stallions there? Is Connor Stallions in attendance? He might be. We don't
might
know.
Be. Could
we
be
don't
anywhere.
Know. Could be on this pod for all we know.
I'm going to look at Ross, see if that's really him or if it's actually Connor Stallions.
Look deeper over my shoulder back here. You never know. In the bookshelf, he's hiding somewhere stealing signals.
He's there, man. He is everywhere. We'll get to that. And we got our first college football playoff rankings. And so we're taping this part, this first part, Tuesday night. We taped other part earlier Tuesday. So if there's a little, you know, if sounds weird or there's some, like, we used the wrong ranking or whatever, don't get mad at us.
I'm dressed doing better for this segment.
Yeah, we, you know, whole thing. You're sober now. You're probably drunk at 8 this morning. Anyway, rankings. Number one, Ohio State. Number two, Georgia. Number three, Michigan. Number four, Florida State. Number five, Washington. Number six, Oregon. Number seven, Texas. Number eight, Alabama. Number nine, Oklahoma. Number 10, Mississippi, and so on. It took me, I put a tweet out predicting the top six. I spent 32 seconds on it, and I said, there it is.
Screw the committee. It's like a one-man committee, Dan Wetzel.
Biggest waste of time is this show. And the committee, I don't understand why these people do it. I'm glad, you know, Ward Manuel could get down there for a couple of days. I know he's not busy at Michigan with anything.
Nothing going on.
I mean, how do you get out of your, how do you like just not go to work for a couple of days to do this? I don't know, but the ADs all get to do it. Ohio State, best resume. No one thinks they're the best team, right?
Yep. Based on what you've accomplished so far, they should be number one, and they are. And then we'll see whether they're good enough to hold it.
Georgia's two. I mean, this sets up the drama of the mid. You know, we got 6 weeks. We got to sell this TV show. So when does Georgia jump Ohio State? Ohio State's in because they have victories over number 11 Penn State, number 15 Notre Dame. Georgia could pick up a victory over number 12 Missouri this weekend.
And then because, number 10, Mississippi, and then number 17, Tennessee.
Yeah, it probably happens after Ole Miss. It probably happens that you would think if they beat Ole Miss, especially if it's some kind of convincing victory, they win the next two. You would think at that point that'd give them a better strength of schedule. I don't know who Ohio State has the next two.
Nobody's special until you get to the big game.
Till Michigan.
There's like 2 3/4 teams in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've beaten 3/4. And so there's one left. But they got the, so that's going to be so dramatic. Will Georgia jump Ohio State in the poll, which doesn't matter? Like, you get no advantage being number one and number four. I guess minor advantage. You get to pick which bowl you go to. I don't know. Anyway, Michigan's three. Everyone, you know, it's just, hey, they look best eye test, but they haven't played anyone. Really remarkable that Michigan has yet to play a meaningful game. And it's a Halloween, and we still got another week. They got Purdue this weekend. Florida State is 4, and then Washington is 5. Oregon sitting there at 6. It's really, does the Pac-12 cannibalize itself? And then can these Big 12 teams get in? They're going to need some help. Obviously, Ohio State and Michigan got to play each other. So, you know, you do not control your destiny if you're Texas or Oklahoma or the Big 12, but they play there's a lot of ranked teams in the Big 12. So I don't know. Any other thoughts on this?
Yeah. Well, they what's the eternal lament about this committee? They vote on records and not strength of schedule. Look at the records. 1 through 5, no losses. 6 through 13, one loss. Thereafter, all the 2-loss teams until you get down to the non-Power 5 teams. It is completely record hierarchy there. So I'm not saying it necessarily shouldn't be, although I think both LSU and Notre Dame are maybe a little underrated, as do the polls. The polls had those two higher than the committee did. But this did nothing to make anybody think that the committee is suddenly going to veer away from win-loss record and go to strength of schedule.
We talk about head-to-head a lot. 7 Texas and 9 Oklahoma. These teams have the same amount of losses, and they actually played on a neutral field. Exactly neutral. How about that? And in Oklahoma won, yet they're 2 spots behind Texas. And I know the excuse is Texas, or the reasoning is Texas had a bigger, probably arguably one of the best, or maybe the best win of the season at Alabama. But again, Oklahoma had a pretty good win too against Texas. So those two should be flipped. But you know, Dan, I'm more concerned about the other rankings, slotting these rankings into a 12-team expanded playoff bracket that will be starting implemented next year using the 6+6 format. We posted a tweet about it with the bracket. You know, it's fascinating. It's cool. And the way the 6+6 works is you have the 6 highest ranked conference champions get automatic qualifiers, 6 at the next 6 highest rank get at large, and then the top 4 seeds are the top 4 conference champions and they get byes. So it'd be Ohio State, Georgia, Florida State, and then Washington would obviously leap into the 4 as the presumed Pac-12 champion. But first round matchups, Texas in Ole Miss in Austin, Oregon and Penn State in Eugene, Michigan hosting Tulane, 12 seed Tulane, the 6th conference champion in Ann Arbor, and then Alabama, Oklahoma in Tuscaloosa, and the winner of that one would play number 1 seed Ohio State. You have some fun second round matchups in here as well, including Georgia and Texas, or Georgia and Ole Miss.
Pretty delicious.
Yeah.
Pretty delicious. Yeah.
It's going to be fun when it gets here.
It's going to be wild. It really is going to be wild. Yeah. 4 weeks of wildness. More teams with it trying to get in. Still wish that second round was in campus, but can't do it. But yeah, imagine that. Imagine some of these trips. What was it? Oklahoma at Alabama?
Oklahoma and Alabama. Yeah, there's a game. There would be playoff games in Austin, in Tuscaloosa, in Eugene, and in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
You imagine a mid-December playoff game in Ann Arbor. And in this bracket, they host Tulane. Oh, the New Orleans folks are coming from 75 and heading into the abyss of the blizzard.
Make the gumbo extra spicy. Extra spicy. All right. Well, that's pretty good. Any other thoughts on this ranking? Do you have any? I mean, we can, like, LSU should be ahead of Missouri. They won, I mean, whatever. Like, I really feel bad these guys rank them all the way out to 25.
Yeah.
We'll see. It'll all play out. It'll all be okay. Okay. The other story that that came up, we almost talked about it this morning, but we honestly, even by the Connor Stallions lunacy, we weren't sure to believe this.
Yeah.
And it's taught us to believe everything at this point.
Yeah.
Central Michigan is investigating if Michigan's Connor Stallions was on the sideline for the Chippewas game against Michigan State at Michigan State. They opened the season, Central Michigan and Michigan State, on a Friday night, And so Michigan was off. So there are pictures of someone who looks an awful lot like Connor Stallions, dressed in Central Michigan coaching gear and wearing sunglasses and on the sideline of Central Michigan. We became aware of these photos late yesterday. We are in the process of determining the facts surrounding them, CMU Athletic Director Amy Folan said. As this process is ongoing, we'll have no further comment at this time. Is this the funniest twist yet?
This is like the twist that really says that Connor Stallions is an absolute lunatic. Unless somebody else is a bigger lunatic and ordering him to do this. But I think we can at least for now assume, given that this guy wrote a 500-page Michigan manifesto, that this might have been his own brainstorm. I mean, it's unbelievable. Think you're going to slip in there, put on the gear. Now, where does he get the gear? How does he get the pass? Those are interesting questions for Central Michigan to answer. And mm-hmm. I think we can make an educated guess that this is really him, because how long does it take to figure out and say, no, that's Dan Smith, our recruiting analyst. That's not him.
Yeah.
If this could have been the greatest case of mistaken identity involving Jim McElwain since some dude jumped on a shark naked. But I don't think it's a mistaken identity. I think this is legit.
He's in the gear. Did he get he looks like the other coaches. Now the hat you could probably just get down the mall. Get anywhere, any store. But the shirt, how did he know they were wearing that? Does he know? I have so many questions about this. It does lend a measure. It both can hurt and help the argument that Jim Harbaugh should have known. One, this is clearly the action of a lunatic.
Yes.
Who, and there's absolutely no way that Michigan would be like, hey, why don't we lend you out to Central?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's fair to suggest this guy was kind of acting on his own, or whoever he was consulting with in the madcap grad assistant room wasn't thinking things through either. At the same time, clearly somebody knew something, unless this guy literally just snuck onto the field. Like, yeah. How did he get on the sideline?
He's got one of their 50 visiting bench passes. You don't get those very easily unless this is okayed by someone at Central Michigan.
You'd think. Or maybe, I don't know. Yeah, you'd think somebody was like, now, was it like, hey, man, we don't use all our 50, and I know this guy. Hey, it'd be funny to just be on the bench, too. Or, like, I mean, as a just the fact that he's at a game on a sideline of another team, like, no one at Michigan would approve that. That's an automatic violation.
Yeah.
That's worse than calling up your buddy from the military to go to the Nebraska game, practically.
Yeah. Now,
I don't know.
I will point out, Jim McElwain, the coach at Central Michigan, was the wide receiver coach at the University of Michigan in 2018, has a relationship with Jim Harbaugh. Doesn't mean there's a direct connection there, but there's a relationship between McElwain and Michigan, and Stallions is at Michigan. Now he was on the sideline at CMU. So there's that. But again, like, if somebody at Michigan said, hey, this is a great idea, then wow, you're a freaking idiot.
He looks like he's wearing one of those like Halloween masks with like the hat that's attached to the glasses and then the mustache as well, and you put the whole thing on, it's all one piece. I mean, it's just it's this story, man. The layers,
the whole thing, it doesn't make any sense.
No,
why would Central allow this? Like, Jim McElwain, how would he possibly allow this?
I think he's gonna have to answer that question after their game. They're playing Tuesday night right now.
You're playing right now.
I would hope someone at Mount Pleasant at the game is going to say, hey, Jim, about this Connor Stallions thing.
Like, if it makes me suggest he didn't know, because he can't be that crazy. But I don't know. In this story, not that crazy is not a really good bet.
There's a lot of crazy going around in this story. A lot of crazy.
He's just standing there with his arms folded. He doesn't have one of those big, one of his little binders. But he's like right there. He's not like hiding out. He's not like hiding out by the medical tent or anything. I mean, at any point did Jim McElwain turn
on for a night game, right?
Yeah. Well, it was. Yeah, it's night, but it's sunny until like 9 o'clock.
Okay.
It is night. But I watched that game. It's sunny until late in Michigan, and I think the visitor side of Spartan Stadium faces west.
Yeah, gets man, the sunset.
Like, we are now, breaking this down this thing, aren't we? It's like the JFK assassination. This is fully a
doesn't matter. He was going to wear those things if it was.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. He's incognito, man. He's
does
incognito.
He, the game,
hey,
he might have
a few
a
more hours of.
Does he have one of those little cameras in the middle of the
right.
like one of those
right
glasses?
In between the right on the nose
that's
bridge, the camera on the nose bridge. Hey, there's a few more hours of Halloween left. I could dress like him. You think anybody would recognize walking down the streets of D.C.? Hey, it's Connor Stallions.
Not in D.C., you take that act to.
There was
Detroit.
No lack of
most college towns. Probably
there was no lack of spying football guys that came to my door. There was a few.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah, popular in Michigan. Anyway, this one is the funniest thing ever. I don't know what it means. It could mean that Jim Harbaugh and Michigan is more guilty. It could mean they're less guilty. I'm not sure which way to lean on it. I lean both ways at different times, and I don't know how Central's just catching strays.
Yeah, it's not going to be a stray anymore. I think they've got some serious answers they're going to have to provide here.
They lost by like 50 points.
Central Michigan, what are you doing with this guy on your sideline?
They almost robbed Michigan State of one of their few victories. What are they? Michigan State's got like two.
Yeah, they got two. They
poor Michigan
September
State.
9th.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. He's got visitors bench. He's there. So more on that on Thursday's show. All right, let's get to a couple of the big games this weekend that will play a factor the rest of the way. None bigger than Alabama, LSU, the SEC kind of popping a little bit this weekend. It's not been their normal dominate all conversation season. They aren't even cheating. They don't even have alleged cheating as good as other leagues anymore.
I was telling somebody in the league, I was like, man, you guys have gone from the Wild West to boring compared to everybody else, certainly compared to the Big Ten.
Does it mean more? Does it really mean more? I don't think so. I think we got a real case, but we'll get to that too. But let's stay in the South here. Alabama, LSU, one of the great rivalries of late. Every game seems to be this this huge either classic contest or some referendum on something. Last year, LSU gets Bama in Baton Rouge. It's Brian Kelly's big victory, signature victory for him. This is going to probably determine the SEC West. Alabama only loss is outside the conference to Texas. They have been very good in stretches. They have a lot of talent. Question is, can Jalen Milroe handle what I think could be a shootout if this gets into a shootout? LSU has a conference loss and a non-conference loss, but they could beat Alabama. They get that inside track. This is what I want to see. I predicted Jaden Daniels as the Heisman Trophy winner before the season, and I don't know that that would happen, but it still can. I think he still has a path there, and I wasn't wrong about how he's playing. 2,573 yards passing so far, 73.1% completion rate, 25 touchdowns against 3 interceptions. He's also rushed for 521 yards, an average of 5.7 per carry, and scored 5 more TDs. These are not Joe Burrow numbers, but they ain't far from him. And this is the game where Jaden Daniels can remind the rest of the country, not just us in the Jaden Daniels fan club, how good he is. And you beat Alabama, you win the West, you go play Georgia. And I don't know that he's not out as a Heisman candidate if he plays like this. Pat, your thoughts on what's going to happen this weekend in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, I'm with you on Jaden Daniels. Leads the nation in total offense, leads the nation in yards per play, total offense. He's been unbelievable. And really the thing that impresses me most, he's listed 6'4", 210. He looks thinner than that. He takes hits and nothing stops him. I mean, he is incredibly tough and durable for a guy that runs it as much as he does. Fascinating game. We've talked about it. You got to give Nick Saban a lot of credit for cobbling together a season with one loss to this point with an offense that is not great. You know, quarterback inconsistent, offensive line not that good. You know, tons of sacks for Jalen Milroe. But they've the receivers just kind of receivers. But they're getting it done, and they're in this position. I am sure the stadium is going to be wildly intense. Fans wanting revenge for the loss last year. It's going to be a great matchup of Daniels and that LSU offense against a really good Alabama defense. I'm probably leaning home team at this point, but we don't have to make picks till Thursday, so I'm going to think about it some more. But this is what the SEC West is about. There's a path. If LSU wins, there's a path to a three-way tie with those two in Mississippi, but Mississippi would have to beat Georgia in Athens for that to happen. And in that case, then things get wild in terms of tiebreakers. But for now, this looks like the winner is going to Atlanta for the championship game.
I don't know what the hell is going to happen in this game. Thankfully, we're not making picks today because Alabama's been LSU and Alabama, both of these teams have been a little Jekyll and Hyde this year. You know, I think Jaden Daniels would be the front runner odds bet. On the Heisman right now, had LSU played better defense earlier in the year and closed out Ole Miss. They were up, two scores in the fourth quarter and blew the lead. Or else, LSU's probably in the top seven, top eight right now, and Jaden Daniels is a leading Heisman contender. And then on the flip side, you got an Alabama offense that, just has really struggled on the offensive line to run the football into pass block and has struggled at times at quarterback with consistency. And I don't know what to make of them, but you've got an LSU team, right, that has certainly struggled to defend at times. So I kind of like Pat with the whole leaning toward the home team. It's going to be a night game there. It's going to be pretty wild and crazy, but man, this is a tough one to predict. And I was at last year's game in Tiger Stadium. I got caught in the field storming actually, and it was wild. And like Pat said, I'm sure they're gonna want to. I'm sure they remember that and the way that game felt.
I mean, yeah, these two bring the best out in each other. Yeah, I wonder if Daniels gets cooking, can Alabama keep up with it? Like, they're going to need to have an incredible defensive game to keep LSU, keep this score low. I think this is that is their real challenge in this, because I just don't know that they have the offense. That said, LSU's defensive backfield and stuff has not always shown up this year. It's going to be a monster. Great game, great setup game here between those teams. Elimination game for sure. For somebody.
Real quick, Dan, is this the fourth anniversary of your tailgate at Bryant-Denny Stadium?
It might be, yeah. We had were they 1-2?
With Burrow. Tua, right?
Burrow against Tua. Like, Donald Trump was there just to add a little extra commotion. We had a nice tailgate down there. You and Pete had to work. I didn't. It was great. Enjoyed every second of it. It is one of the best. You know, look, if you're looking for a rivalry, you know, you want like a guy's trip, birthday, a bachelor party, something like that. Go with your father, whatever. It doesn't have to be guys. But you can't really do better than LSU Alabama at either place.
Yeah,
I've been for that game for both. I mean, it is. Both places, tailgate guys, right? I had the tailgate guys. They set up your tent.
Yes, you did. Set up your. Yep. I mean, they did everything but shine your shoes.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It's pretty good. They didn't buy the booze. It's true. To buy it. Just why? So they could have done more. No, it's It's going to be fantastic. It's college football at its finest. Can't beat LSU, Alabama, and particularly at night. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. I'm kind of glad that game was at 2:30 Tuscaloosa time, or else we might not have made it. I don't know if we would have made it. We would have powered through. We would have powered through. Show some grit. Hashtag grit. all right. The other one, Missouri at Georgia. And question here is, can the Tigers beat not just a good team, but a great team? Missouri is having a big season, 7-1. Best win, though, is home over Kansas State on a long, long field goal. Other than that, they've beaten a lot of bad teams. They're not taking anything away from beating Kansas State. Kentucky hasn't really panned out as a top tier opponent. Missouri's just taking care of business. Do they have enough to go into Athens and play against a Georgia team that it feels like they kind of, you know, maybe they're not always into every game, but if they feel challenged, they do. It's like they're cornered and it's like, oh yeah, we're still here, but we may sleepwalk a little bit. Ross, your thoughts on the challenge for Mizzou? Are they capable of upsetting Georgia on Saturday?
Well, I mean, a much worse Missouri team almost did it last year. You know, remember in Columbia, Mizzou was like a 30-point underdog and led by 10, I think, midway through or so the fourth quarter, you know, before Georgia came back and scored a couple of touchdowns late to win the game in a wild one. So I think about that, you know, they were able to keep with them then. And this is a better team. Brady Cook is a quarterback playing really well. And Mizzou's defense is playing good enough. I think they can. I don't think they will. Can and will, two separate things. Georgia's playing, I think, too good right now. Dan, I think you summarized it really well. It does seem like in certain games, Georgia does kind of sleepwalk, especially offensively. It just seems like they don't really, you know, want to be there for whatever reason. But lately, we kind of haven't seen that team, you know, and they feel like they're rolling a little more. So I think I know we're not making picks, but this one just seems like one of those that gonna get away a little bit, you know. And this is the first we talked about LSU Alabama being the night game. This is like CBS's last doubleheader, SEC doubleheader, and it's a good one, you know, the division lead on each. But this is the opener, and something tells me it's not gonna be. It might be a little snoozer.
Yeah, it's. I mean, when you put a number next to the opponent's name, like there is with Missouri, I think that gets the attention of Georgia. When you people start talking, oh, they could be vulnerable here. You know, Brock Bowers is hurt. Rivalry game, cocktail party. No. Kentucky looks good coming in. No. So Missouri had the advantage of sneaking up on Georgia last year. Now, all respect to Missouri, they have had an excellent season. Brady Cook has played very well at quarterback. Luther Burden should be very much in the conversation for, like, first-team All-American receiver. He's been fantastic. Cody Schrader, running back, I think he's second in the SEC in rushing to Ray Davis. So they've got some weapons. Defense, yeah, it's not bad. They can be disruptive at times. But I do think this game basically rises and falls on how Georgia plays. If Georgia plays to its customary standard, Georgia will win and probably win fairly easily. If Georgia screws around, as it has done a few times this year, could be an interesting one. So it will be, yeah, to Ross's point, you know, it's going to be a great day of SEC football. East in the afternoon, West at night. Let's see where they stand come midnight.
All right, now to the just really, it really means more conference. We don't talk football, we talk Big Ten. Brian Ferentz has got.
Yep.
Yeah. Like this
man,
is
our long running bit is.
Yeah.
Ending.
No more tracker. Again. Yeah. Fans tracker no longer matters.
No longer.
I took the tracker out of the dash this week. He's Sam. Out.
What are we going to do?
He's done. Again, SEC is just about football. The Big Ten is the mayhem conference. It's the it's the crazy cousin conference. Stop looking down your noses at the SEC, these wild and down south. You guys are crazy. Okay?
True.
Brian Ferentz could not get there and getting any 325 points. He gets fired. Now, he's going to be relieved at the end of the year. The Iowa offense coordinator, the son of the head coach, Kirk Ferentz. Kirk Ferentz still can't fire his son. We get this. This is part of my humor on this entire thing. Statement from Beth Getz. Henry B. and Patricia B. Tippy, interim director of athletics chair. That is her title.
I hate when they do that. I hate it.
Henry B. and Patricia B. Tippy got to jump in on this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Interim athletic department chair.
Interim director of athletics. Can't just call it. Henry B. and Patricia B. must have dropped some coin to have this interim director of athletics chair named after them.
Hell,
you really
want
to be involved in this?
Yeah. Leave our name off of it in this situation, will
there
you,
please? There are three names in the statement getting rid of Brian Ferentz. None of them are Kirk. Four paragraphs about basically... after conversations with head coach Kirk Ferentz, coach Brian Ferentz, and President Wilson, the Sickos committee wondered whether they had a parent-teacher conference and like Kirk had to sit in a tiny chair in like the third grade, talk about your child. Yes, God, development hasn't all been there. Little chatty in class. Acts up.
We'll work with him at home.
We'll work with him at home. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I don't know what Henry B. and Patricia B. think. Do you really need the middle initial two? I mean, who are these people? It all goes back to Iowa. Iowa's just got to throw a little extra salt in there every time. They can never behave. Can't even fire a guy who should have been fired 2 years ago like anyone else. And here's the thing. He's not even fired. He's relieved of his duties at the end of the season. They're 6-2. They can still win the Big Ten West. And you're saying this guy absolutely isn't good enough. So not good enough that I had to go talk to the president of the school. I had to make a move as the Henry B. and Patricia B. Tippy interim director of athletics chair. I had to make the call. I had to overrule. This is not working because anybody who's watched Iowa football said, oh, my God, we got a defense that, I mean, if we had an average offense, you're going to that Big Ten title game and Ohio State, Michigan, whatever, whoever's coming out of the East, it's going to be a battle. Not with this offense. And yet, you're saying to your players, they say, well, as Hawkeyes, let's continue to support all of our coaches and student athletes in their pursuit of a Big Ten championship and bowl game victory. I know how you could support them. Put a new offensive coordinator in.
Get him out now. That's how.
What does Henry B. think? What does Patricia B. think? They didn't build the fortune to pay for this thing by sitting down going, this is terrible, but we're going to let him stay for the rest of this. This guy, my sales manager, is not good, but I'm just going to keep him for a while and maybe blow a big chance.
That's it. Your sales manager is not good, but you're really close to meeting your end of year goals, but you're going to keep the same terrible guy in there for the next month when you could get somebody else in and maybe have a chance of meeting those goals, a better chance. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. But here's the thing with Iowa is Kirk Ferentz showed a lot of loyalty to the place, and the loyalty he has been repaid with, he's become an emperor. I mean, it's unbelievable. The dude has had latitude to do anything, to hire his son, to have his son be completely incompetent for 3 years, really. Two for sure, but three, you could argue, for sure, the last three. You know, he's been totally in charge of everything. He was very protective of his strength coach, who eventually they had to get rid of amidst controversial circumstances. A lot of players complaining about his treatment. And it's like he's just become untouchable because he could go 8-4. And, you know, good for Kirk, but this is a change that absolutely should have happened at least a year ago, probably 2 years ago, and they're still not going to do it until after they play in the you know, Citrus Bowl or whatever.
I'm dying to know just exactly how this came about, like this conversation came about, because Beth Getz is a interim AD who most, I think, feel like she'll get the full-time job. But as an interim athletic director, it's kind of an unusual, kind of awkward position to be in a situation like this. And let's just be honest, if she does get the full-time job, you know, she's going to probably have more decisions like this to make, potentially, you know, about another Ferentz, right, leading the program and in the future of the program. But it's truly amazing how inefficient and just terrible Iowa's offense is. And I hope Beth Getz, if she got pushback from Kirk Ferentz, because, you know, usually in a situation like this, you know, Kirk is the one, the head coach is the one to make the decision. And usually in a situation like this, the head coach is, yeah, quoted in the statement and makes the call. So I'm guessing he had the opportunity to do it and didn't. And I'm just was browsing through Iowa's offensive record. There are 133 FBS teams, and Iowa's number 133. But not only that, there, and that's an average yards per game, which is there at 232, which is 25 yards worse than the next best team, Eastern Michigan. It is just incredible. In almost 100 yards worse than like the number 112th ranked team, which is Nebraska. It's just shockingly bad. But I'm dying to know kind of how the communication worked here. And obviously, Kirk Ferentz said no, that he didn't want to do this. And so that's an interesting place for an interim AD to be, for sure. But I'll tell you this, she's gotten favor. She's curried favor with the fan base over this decision.
I do want to know what Kirk Ferentz, Moon family head football coach at the University of Iowa, has to say to Beth Getz, Henry B. and Patricia B. Tippy, interim director of athletics chair.
A lot of endowments going on there. Good for them.
Good for them. Take the money. By the way, Henry Tippy is a badass. I looked him up.
Is he?
Henry B. Born in Belle Plaine, Iowa, raised on a farm in rural Iowa. Enlisted in the Army upon graduating high school, served in the Pacific Theater of World War II.
Whoa. Mm.
D-Day, was involved in D-Day in the Army Air Force.
Did both theaters? Jeez, Pacific and European theater.
Well, no, maybe it was enlisted on the day before D-Day. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Served in the Pacific Theater. He wasn't that good. He was good. Couldn't manage
that's
to fight.
That's a heck of a double. You know?
That really would have been. I would have heard about him. Went to Iowa on the GI Bill. Created Rollins. Eventually purchased Orkin, the pest control company.
Wow.
Lived till 95 years old. And passed away last year. So incredible life lived by Henry. He did not deserve to be dragged into this. Although I guess this is what you get. You get me to look him up and everyone go, thank you for your service. You I had the utmost respect for it. 17, 18 years old, just senior year of high school going, yeah, I'm in. Let's go.
One theory, Ross, on maybe why Kirk Ferentz didn't pull the trigger on this is, you know, to avoid the obvious nepotism here. Brian Ferentz has directly reported to the athletic director and not the head coach.
Oh, that's right.
So maybe that was in play. But still, there's usually a comment from the head coach or something.
Thank you for your service. Yeah.
But
how do you not? There's nobody in Iowa City that can call some plays. it's illogical. It's illogical. Yeah. We don't think he's good enough. It's not like it's a lost season where you're like, look, we're 2-8. We're gonna replace our head coach in a couple weeks. But we're going to play and I don't know. All right. Speaking of coaches who are fired up, William Christopher Sweeney.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking Dabo needs to get rid of the radio show.
No, don't do that.
Well, it's
no,
good for us.
That's worth a lot of his income.
That's true.
How those things work, those contracts.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, how is that? Like, how much money are you making on a coach's call-in show in South Carolina radio?
Well, oftentimes they include, because it's, you know, these public schools, they don't want to show that, the money, you know, all the money's coming from the school, so they'll add in, what is it? It's usually like entertainment in media.
Yeah.
Whatever, and that's their main salary. So I'm guessing it's rolled up in that, you know.
Yeah, they pretend they make. I mean, they can't be that valuable of a show. Although they do have Tyler from Spartanburg was calling in.
Ooh boy, oh Tyler! Also, so, man, this 2.5 minute Tyler question is just brutal to get through.
Yeah, they need a new producer on the show.
Yeah,
that needed to be cut off.
Do not let Tyler from Spartanburg take 2.5 minutes worth of shots. At your head coach, Hall of Fame coach.
30 seconds is enough.
He's saying, why you're getting paid this much. You're not, and then, you know, we're not winning. This is a disaster. All this different stuff. Really taking shots at Dabo in between. I do appreciate you're a Christian. I do appreciate you're a man of faith. I do believe you're a man of faith, but damn, you're a badass football, isn't it? But you
Why
are
we paying
faith.
You $11 million.
You are overpaid, and your Danny Ford wasn't even this bad. But I do appreciate your faith. It is good.
Yeah, he kicked it off with, hey, Tommy Bowden, basically.
Yeah, Tommy Bowden. Yeah, I mean, gosh, that is rough. These men of faith, they're a little harsh on each other. Dabo was having none of it. He gets called out by Tyler, who I don't think is as young as Dabo thought, but whatever. Yeah. Dabo goes crazy. A 5-minute rant on this thing about how Clemson wasn't any good until he got there, which is kind of true. They weren't that bad, but they weren't what they are. And some of his best parts, you're part of the problem. And he's like, Tyler, he's mocking him. The appreciation, the expectation is greater than the appreciation. That's the problem. We won 12, 10 plus win seasons in a row. That's happened 3 times in 150 years. Clemson ain't sniffed a national championship for 35 years. We won 2 in 7 years. Only 2 other teams can say that, Georgia and Alabama. Is this a bad year? Yeah, and it's my responsibility. Take 100% responsibility for it. This is bull crap. You're thinking all these narratives you read. Listen, man, you can have your opinion all you want. You can apply for the job, and good luck to you. On his salary, I started as the lowest paid coach in this business. I work my ass off. I'm not going to let this smart ass kid get on the phone and tell me how to do my job. It goes on and on. If you want a good laugh, 5 minutes of hearing William Christopher flip out. Thoughts, Pat? Sure, you have some.
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah, that was like, first of all, producer failure to curtail that, because if you give Tyler 2.5, you are definitely going to get 5 from Dabo. We've all been around and been to his press conferences. That dude will talk and talk and talk and talk. And you bring up this subject and you put him on the defensive, you're going to get a filibuster from Dabo. So to a degree, I understand, like, you know, nobody wants to be just publicly upbraided like that, but it is also part of making $11 million a year. And it is part of the deal. And the fans do care. And when you're 4-4, you got to go to your radio show, sit there saying, okay, tonight's going to suck. This is going to be bad, but I'm just going to swallow it and take it. You may have a little bit of a fire back on something stupid, but you can't just let yourself go for 5 minutes like that, I don't think. You know, I mean, you can, but you come off looking wildly defensive, and it looks like this season is really getting to you. And maybe that's a good sign. Maybe it should get to you and indicate that you're really not happy with where the program is. But this is that's part of the job. I mean, to a degree, we all got Tyler from Spartanburg in our Twitter mentions every day. You just kind of have to learn to roll with some of that to a degree.
I don't have any Tylers in my Twitter mentions appreciating my religious views, but
you suck as a reporter, Ross. Appreciate your faith. Appreciate your faith.
Thanks for the faith. Yeah.
Now get a new career and go die.
Yeah. That's right.
That's basically what you hear. Yeah.
So I was just blown away by how angry Dabo sounded in the how he articulated at times the word Tyler, just showed how like angry and frustrated he is. And I think it gave us all a window into the struggle right now at Clemson and the frustration in its head coach over those issues that they're having down there. It was a good window into a coach's frustration. Those things usually are reserved, for behind closed doors for a reason. But one thing about Dabo, right? He's pretty authentic. He has the feelings out there. He puts them out there, and he certainly did with this.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the way to handle it, but I largely agree with Dabo, but you make the 11.5 because you want all these things. You get this attention, like you created the monster. It's tough. Basically, he needs to act more like a boring, dull, it doesn't matter much SEC coach program where losing is quietly accepted. It's not such a big deal. And not a non-SEC, like the rest of the country. Again, ACC, yeah. Acting up, SEC, not. All about football. Boring. Boring, boring, boring. Guys, have lost your mojo. Lost your mojo.
Speaking hey, real of, quick.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Are you done on Dabo?
I'm done, yeah. Okay. I'm done, yeah.
No, I kind of addressed the question in the 40-yard dash this week about whether he can get it back. Like once you have that run, that great 6-year run that they had, is it over? And it may be, but there are definitely historical instances of all-time great coaches who have had a great run, then hit a tough period, and then come back and win championships. Barry Switzer at Oklahoma had the great run in the 70s, then came back and still won a title in 85. Bear Bryant had a run in the 60s and another run later in the 70s with a bad 3-year stretch in between. John McKay had 4 titles spread out over like 13 years. Woody Hayes, so it can happen. But is Dabo one of the truly all-time great coaches who can do that, or did he just have a great run? There's nothing wrong with if that's it. He still had an all-time career. He's the greatest coach in Clemson history. But we'll see whether he can turn it around. He's going to have to adapt, modernize, do things differently, which is tough for him. But I don't think it's out of the question.
Yeah.
Well, and all those coaches, like, one thing certainly Bear Bryant did right was adapt to the times. I think he changed it after those bad seasons. He changed his office. Didn't he go to the Wishbone? I feel like he went to the Wishbone.
They did in the early 70s. Yeah.
Kind of evolved a little bit, and you wonder if Dabo can evolve. Right. He's really not used the transfer portal very much at all. He's pushed back against it. I remember it's been a year and a half. I remember meeting with him in his office, and he looked at me, he said, "Ross, I know at some point I'm going to have to use the portal. I mean, obviously I'm going to have to use it, but we don't need it right now." And I think maybe he needs it right now. So it'll be interesting to see if coaches can, those coaches you mentioned, I think a lot of them to an extent did adapt to the times and change and evolve. And we've seen that from Nick Saban too, obviously, especially offensively with schematics and how he views the game. Can Dabo adapt now?
Bear Bryant integrated the roster.
Ah, yes. That was certainly a factor.
Yeah.
If you look at his 3 worst years were 60, I think it's 68, 69, 70. Well, that's, the time when Alabama was one of the last schools playing with an all-white roster.
Yeah. So that's part of it. Like, they're not 4-4 because they're missing on a couple transfers, but maybe because they were close games and one player can make a difference and fill a gap. But, they still have a lot of good recruiting talent. It's still a great place. They're still should be able to get recruits, but it is a battle. I remember Brian Kelly having a terrible year at Notre Dame one year, like 3-9. Next year, they're good. Mark D'Antonio had a terrible year at Michigan State, and it's his very good run. Obviously, those guys didn't reach Clemson levels. But all of a sudden, it's like, oh, boy, bottom falls out. The really good coaches spring back up. The other thing you could do, and I don't really know how this would even work with Dabo, because he's just so ingrained at Clemson, but you go the Urban Meyer route and keep bouncing around.
Right, right.
Go to another school. And, I've done my work here. I'm going to step down for a year, do a little TV, and then boom, something opens and I go back in. It's not really his personality though. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. All right. Other conferences acting up in ways the SEC are supposed to. How about Bedlam, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State? Oklahoma's doing their part as a future member. This is the final game of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State for a long time. It's got a great nickname. It's a passionate, passionate rivalry. If you've ever been to it, football and basketball, I really hope to at least keep the basketball. There's no excuse to not. There's plenty of games you could play. They should certainly keep it in the other sports, wrestling and softball and all that. But it's crazy important in Oklahoma. It's crazy important in Oklahoma. Oklahoma normally dominates the football rivalry on this, but obviously Mike Gundy's evened it out some in certain years. But Gundy said the rivalry's not as big as it was. And he said we didn't have social media when he played. He was a quarterback there. He says, like Brian Bosworth spit in my face, I spit in his. It was actually a rivalry. Okay. Then he says, the summer before my sophomore year, I would go to parties in Oklahoma City. Now, first off, I'd like to go to a party with Mike Gundy after his sophomore year in Oklahoma City.
Oh, boy.
Buckle up.
Yeah. Yep.
Buckle up. Imagine that mullet flowing in that late 80s wind down there in OKC.
In some cheap Milwaukee's best or something.
Anything could happen. Anything could happen. Gundy patrolling OKC in the 80s?
Look out, cowboy.
Like riding clear the range with Jesse James, man.
That's right.
Clear the morning. Gundy's here. Summer before my sophomore year. Man, you go to a party with Gundy in Oklahoma City on a Saturday night, you wake up in Vegas on Tuesday morning. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You don't know. You don't know.
Damn that Gundy. Got us again.
Anyway, I go to parties in Oklahoma City. They would say, well, Bosworth and Paul Migliazzo and some of those guys were here. And I had to make a decision. We were going to have a confrontation there and who was with me. Because those guys, I could kick them in the shin and run like hell, but I'm not dumb. So we had to make those decisions because what kind of frame of mind was Brian going to be in at that point? I don't know. Had he taken
that's a whole other question.
Had he taken a, quote, vitamin C and had a few drinks? Well,
vitamin
he might not. This is a coach. Again, get your together, SEC. Well, Gundy just doesn't care. He just doesn't care. Well, he might not be a guy that you want to talk to at that point. He get real red across his face. So it was a rivalry then. Okay, so of course, Bosworth, he's the sheriff, of course, in the Fansville commercials for Dr. Pepper. It's Sheriff Brian Bosworth. So if Gundy drives through Fansville, like that's an episode in itself, right? Mm-hmm. Be a shame if we found cocaine in your trunk, you know? I would not be anywhere near Sheriff Boswell. You're going in the clink. Yeah. Anyway. Bosworth sends out a tweet. Guess what, Coach G? Bedlam is still a rivalry, and Big Brother, all caps, still wants to whip little brother's ass. How about OU is capitalized. Cute, cute Boz. Boz is kind of cute. That's nice. He's tweeting like a 13-year-old girl texts. Never thought I'd see this out. This is the least cool thing Brian Bosworth's ever done is his capitalizations. How about we meet this Saturday at your place, the OU capitalized. Let's say the 50-yard line so we can exchange pleasantries in the old-fashioned way, face-to-face. I'll see you there, Boomer. I think Brian Bosworth just threatened to kick Mike Gundy's ass at the 50-yard line of the final of Bedlam, and I am here for all of it.
Oh, this is like, as if this game didn't have enough buildup. Now we have got these two guys, both Oklahoma natives, both loud, cocky dudes who, you know, represent their fan bases and going at each other like this. And a Gundy dropping the vitamin C line, that is just incredible. That, you know, Boz might have had some performance-enhancing metabolics that he had ingested during his day. I will say, the night before the 1996, January 1, 96 on Rose Bowl, New Year's Eve, 95. I had many drinks accidentally with Brian Bosworth.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
He weighed about 70 pounds less than he did when he played, but he was great company. It was hilarious. We were talking about his acting career and this. We were at a Northwestern alumni party. Northwestern was going to play USC in the Rose Bowl. My wife was a Northwestern grad. Our friend's Northwestern. So that's who I was there with, and why he was there, I never really figured out.
He goes wherever he wants. He just walks in.
Right.
I'm Bosworth.
He's Bos.
He's Bos.
Sheriff Bosworth. So, but anyway, he was great company then, and I'm glad to see him get riled up here for the last Bedlam. Hopefully it's really not the last Bedlam, but for now it's on paper it is.
I hope so. Was he suggesting that they meet at midfield and like spit in one another's face?
Either spit or fight, one of the two. Mm.
Face to face, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to kiss. I have no idea.
You know, I really hope, this game, I mean, like everybody, I don't know that anybody really wants this game to go away, except there's probably some people at Oklahoma State, right, that are pretty angry. I did see where both athletic directors told I think it was a local media last week in the buildup toward the game. They certainly left the door open. You know, in the heat of the moment after Oklahoma leaves for the SEC and all that, you got a lot of anger and stuff. But I think as it sits a little bit, you're already seeing a little bit of retraction and walking it back a little bit. So the Oklahoma State athletic director, he kind of left the door cracked. They're scheduled out through much of the 2020s into 2030 with Power Five games. But those are pretty easy to change around. And he mentioned that. So hopefully this game continues because it's wild. The first one I went to was 2 years ago, and it was incredible. Just an incredible environment. It was in Stillwater, and it's a fun one.
Where else are you getting this? Again, we got Nick Saban and Brian. I really respect Brian's program. All right. I got some good athletes over there. All right. Like, no, I want this.
Yeah.
I'll fist Mike. Brian Bosworth, all time. I mean, what a legend. Remember when he wore the T-shirt at the bowl game? NCAA, it said National Communists Against Athletes. Welcome to Russia. Bosworth, 40 years ahead of his time.
Didn't Bosworth, and this I must have been after he was done with college, because I don't think he could profit like this, but he had a t-shirt company that sold t-shirts that said Bosworth sucks. He's making money off of it.
That's awesome. He showed all his haters, didn't he? Pay for this shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
What did he get? They must have suspended him for everything. I don't think Boz was it's funny he's in law enforcement now in Fansville, because he I don't know why, what happened. Yeah, got kicked off the team. I got to reread Bootleggers, boy. Great. You want a classic college football read? Barry Switzer's autobiography, Bootleggers, Boy.
Yeah.
It's probably about 60% accurate. It's told via hit. We don't know which 60%, but it's 100% funny.
Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
No, and they won't. It is one of the greatest college football books ever. I read that book when I was in high school or something, and it literally made me a college football fan, I think. It was one of the books that I just was like, I cannot believe this is real. There is a guy. This is how this operation works. Anyway, good times. No punching each other, fellas. No punching. No spitting either. Yeah. That's gross. I know. Yeah. And, you know, that's just gross. But, you know, if you guys do a little pointing, little flip the mullet, I don't care. I don't care. Let's do this. All right. Couple stories I got to get to before we got a people's court too. Quickly, our Santa Cruz Otter. You remember Sea Otter 841?
Yes.
Sea Otter 841. Congratulations are in order for the Santa Cruz Otter 841. Now, if you remember, Sea Otter 841 is famous for stealing surfboards from the surfers of Santa Cruz and boldly running up and almost like just snatching their surfboards away and stealing them. And it led to the start of what we really saw was a lot of otter uprising around the country.
Yeah. It was, we had river otters. We had sea otters.
A lot going on earlier. Anyway, congrats. Sea Otter 84 is a mom. Yeah. There are pictures have emerged of her with a little pup playing in the waves off of Santa Cruz. And people are excited. So, A, good job, but B, concerned that we're multiplying, Pat. Are we concerned?
Well, I'm pro otter in this, so I'm fine with more otters out there, you know, showing attitude. That's I have no problem with that. And she had disappeared. 841 had disappeared. And between the bears with the numbers and we need names instead of numbers for our animals. But still, she disappeared. Everybody's like, oh no, did she get killed? Is she hurt? No, she was pregnant. She was just going off to have a pup. So she had the pup. Congratulations to her. Get back to stealing, get back to protecting the turf, and go otter. I'm down with the otter struggle.
Have as many pups as you can. We need all these stories that we can get, you know? So more content, more pups, more content.
No sign of the husband. That's like a battered husband. Like, you don't see otter 841. Stay home and clean the house. I'm going playing with the... we also have this statement. This is kind of interesting from Ashley McConnell, team leader in the Ventura Fish and Wildlife offices of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. God, the titles. Everyone's got a title. I want a longer title. I barely have a job. Ashley McConnell said, brought this up, that maybe the reason the surfboards were getting stolen is because of the pregnancy. Hormonal surges related to pregnancy have been known to cause aggressive behavior in female southern otters.
What? Not just in otters, I'm here to tell you.
I'm just going to leave that right there. you can jump that one, Pat.
You can jump on that
grenade.
Yeah, no, there were some pregnancy flashes that, yikes, run the other way.
Otter 841 is there for all of us. All right, finally, quick people's court, okay? Washington, D.C., this is your turf, Ross. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The couple D.C. firefighters, okay? So what happened was they got a March 24th, so it's a little bit dated, but they just had action. The story just popped back up. A 911 caller reported a woman suffering some chest pain at an office in Northeast D.C. Ambulance 3 was sent to help. Yet the two firefighters assigned to ambulance 3, it had been a busy day. They said they were hungry and they had just ordered some food on the Chick-fil-A app. So rather than go directly to emergency, they stopped at the Chick-fil-A at 14th Street and Maryland Avenue to get their Chick-fil-A.
No, wait, 14th and what?
Maryland. Northeast. Maryland Ave, okay. Northeast. And it was about a mile. It was sort of on the way. And they went in and got their food. And they claimed that there was no delay. They were, you know, Chick-fil-A, great service.
They're pretty
great
quick.
Service. Yeah, if you order through that app, it is pretty good.
Pretty quick.
They were fired for this. Fired. Mm-hmm. It took classic. It took the NCAA slow. I mean, it took took 7 months to conduct this investigation. I apparently there's a question here, Pat. Should firefighters who are hungry and conveniently use the Chick-fil-A app, and you don't want cold Chick-fil-A, you want hot Chick-fil-A, should they be allowed to stop for lunch on the way to an emergency?
Look, I think if you're efficient about it, you know, I mean, look, you file through you go through the app, you go to like if you're going to Popeyes or McDonald's or something, you know, the service is much sketchier. You just don't know how long it's going to take. Chick-fil-A, you can be reasonably sure they're going to get you in and get you out. Might even be able to call ahead and say, hey, can you throw the bag at us as we drive by?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll catch it and go. I'm
Somebody on the back of the ladder will catch the bag.
As that's right.
Going by.
Free the Chick-fil-A firefighters. I'm on their side.
Look at this. Look at this lovely city that I am. I live in, and our infrastructure, and yes, it's spectacular. I my gym is right across from one of the fire department units, or whatever they call them. What do they call them? Not engines.
Firehouses.
Firehouses. I think it's like number 9. Firehouse number 9. I hope this is not one of the people that I see outside lurking around that firehouse. These firefighters just kind of waiting on the next call. Glad to see we're in the news. There you go.
Yeah. Let's say you're in the drive-thru and a fire truck comes. Like, you know, fire truck, police, anybody, ambulance, you know, they got their lights on. You get out of the way. Mm-hmm. If you're in the drive-thru and, like, they put the lights on, you get out of the drive-thru and let them through? Mm. You're like, come on, dude.
Depends how hungry I am.
He's trying to cheat and jump the line.
Yeah, don't look kindly on cheaters. And usually if I'm in the drive-thru line, I'm not just hungry, I'm hangry. So it might be a bit of a confrontation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very Seinfeld conversation. It's like reminds me of the episode where Elaine goes to meet her boyfriend at the movie theater, and she arrives, and as she's walking in the theater, the host of the theater says, your boyfriend's been hit by a car. He's at the hospital. And she, you know, freaks out. Oh, my gosh, I got to get there. And then she looks at the concession stand and then goes and buys a box of juju fruits before going to visit him at the hospital. Arrives at the hospital. He sees the juju fruits and, you know, they didn't make it. So juju fruits. There you go.
There you go. Pretty much everything goes back to Seinfeld. So my wife found us that story. See?
Good work.
She's like, oh, this might be interesting for you.
Team Wetzel.
You morons can discuss this.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back Thursday with Race for the Case picks. More football, more mayhem. I need some crazy out of the SEC. I need some crazy. I think they can do it. They just got to apply themselves.
I'm pretty sure they have it in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. They're pulling a Clemson-type season out of the crazy and leaving all the fun to everybody else. We'll pick some games and get to it. Appreciate everybody listening. Continue to share us on social media, and we will talk to you later.